Hello, good morning to Nepal, and thank you all for he's always here. He's been here since the beginning, so we will shout out our Nepalese fan, and thank you to all of our mods for being here. Chris, how is your internet? Are we going to make it through this episode?
We'll make it. I hope so. Inshallah.
I'll try not to be too pessimistic. I'll start you guys off with some funnies. So we'll do that first. So we'll be the reverse of Sour Patch Kids. We'll be sweet first and then we'll be sour. So let's see what Victoria Nuland Jr.
Well, I traveled for that reason many times to Moldova, and USAID made unprecedented investments there. This was not a country that USAID had really had much of a presence in, very small. We expanded it massively, both for the sake of Ukraine, but of course also for Moldova. And it was a democratic bright spot with President Sandu, a Kennedy School graduate, and a real reformer. And she narrowly squeaked by the last time, as you know. But I'm very worried about Moldova as well.
Yes, I hope that you already invested some money to fight against Russian influence.
We did. We surged resources. I can't remember now the numbers, but I mean the so-called Ukraine supplementals always had tens of millions of dollars also from Moldova. And that, sorry for the banging, and that money went much, much further in Moldova than it did in Ukraine because it's such a small country. But all of that money was cut off when Trump came to power.
So that's Samantha Power talking to Boban and Lexus, thinking that they're Poroshenko leading up to the election. I hadn't even seen that video in its entirety until just now.
But we're conspiracy theorists for saying about USAID and things like that. We are conspiracy. We're Russian butts.
They didn't get rid of us. They didn't get rid of our Russian influence. But what you talked a little bit about your sources in Moldova and what they had seen. Here's an infographic, I believe, from our friends at Rest Media. Just some of the things, irregularities that were noticed, the ballot stuffing we talked about on Sunday. If you guys didn't watch our video on Sunday, we definitely went through this in more detail. We're not going to go into it today. We talked about the restrictions of polling. We talked about the banning of opposition parties and all of these other things. And Maya Sandu, once again, barely squeaks by with a victory. And you know what's interesting I noticed is that they banned the two sort of more mainstream left parties, opposition parties, and then left kind of the more, I don't want to say cartoonish, but the one that was easier to be written off as like a, they're just weird communists, don't pay attention to them. And they banned kind of the two leftist mainstream. And she still barely won.
I don't even think she won. Rightfully know, they stuffed the ballots. They closed down polling stations. They had irregularities. There were a whole bunch of things. And some of the numbers are skewed for some of the regions from my sources on the ground. So this election was definitely stolen. Of course, it's part of the ongoing hybrid war against the Russian Federation in the region.
Hybrid war on I think, the people as well in the former Eastern Bloc. And now, well, speaking of hybrid wars, we had our big meeting with the Department of War yesterday. We're both prior service members. As soon as I heard about this, I was like, I would hate for one of those flag officers to be my CO right now. He's probably so pissed. And then, so let's take a look at some of the highlights, I guess.
But if the words I'm speaking today are making your heart sink, then you should do the honorable thing and resign.
National Guardsman Pete Hegseth, also a known alcoholic and Fox News host, is telling a bunch of four-star, there's probably thousands of years of combat experience in that room. He's telling them to resign if they don't like what he's about to say.
You have to love it. It reminds me of like this little man who's like, you know, toughen up, buttercup, you know, this kind of, you know, machismo, which is fake totally, because I don't think he ever saw a day in combat. To my knowledge, I don't think he has a combat action badge or a combat infantry badge.
There's conflicting accounts of that. Yes, I do know that he's only ever been a National Guardsman, which
because if you see like what he wears mm-hmm. his regimental crest always. But for example, I mean, I have my airborne wings, so I would wear my airborne wings because mm-hmm. I'm very proud of them. But usually, people who have CIBs or CABs, they wear them because it's you know it's a sign that you were in active combat in the U.S. military. I've never seen him wear one.
There's more. I mean, he went on and I do want like we'll take a look at it holistically when we're done looking at the videos. But
to ensure peace, we must prepare for war. From this moment forward, the only mission of the newly restored Department of War is this: war fighting, preparing for war and preparing to win, unrelenting and uncompromising in that pursuit. Not because we want war. No one here wants war, but it's because we love peace. We love peace for our fellow citizens. They deserve peace, and they rightfully expect us to deliver it. Our number one job, of course, is to be strong so that we can prevent war in the first place. The president talks about it all the time. It's called peace through strength. And as history teaches us, the only people who actually deserve peace are those who are willing to wage war to defend it. That's why pacifism is so naive and dangerous. It ignores human nature, and it ignores human history. Either you protect your people and your sovereignty, or you will be subservient to something or someone. It's a truth as old as time. And since waging war is so costly in blood and treasure, we owe our republic a military that will win any war we choose.
It's comical, really. It's comical.
Right. I mean, I just, this is what I said before the meeting even took place. Could have been an email. I knew they were going to say that. Could have been an email.
It could have been an email.
It could have been an email.
It could have even been death by PowerPoint. They could have sent the PowerPoint presentation for everybody doing their fucking command.
I thought they had peace, no through, need. Peace through wars.
No need.
No All right, need. Moving on.
No more identity months, DEI offices, dudes in dresses. No more climate change worship. No more division, distraction, or gender delusions. No more debris. As I've said before, and will say again, we are done with that shit.
I wonder if they're going to take women out of combat roles. That was a big change because when I joined, when I was an infantry officer, there were no women in combat roles. And then after women were allowed into some of the combat arms and then were able to go to Ranger school and all that stuff. So I'd be very interested to hear what the Department of War now wants to think about women warfighters and, you know, warriors and, you know, especially in combat arms roles. That'll be interesting to see.
I love that they're constantly talking about, like, they think like there's like this big trans issue in the military. There's not. I mean, I can't speak to like the last 2 years, but up until when I retired, I met only two trans people in my entire career.
I never met any, to be honest. In the military, I didn't. But one thing that was very striking from this, and we'll see more, I'm sure, mm-hmm. is that it felt almost like a hazing ritual of sorts.
Yes.
We're like, welcome to the new Department of War.
Yes.
And all of you are all, you know, 3-4-star generals, 2-star generals, brigadier. Okay, all of you, sit your asses down and we're going to tell you what's going on here. And, you know, sort of it felt almost, because then he talked about it at one point, you know, we're going to let the commanders loose. We're going to let the drill sergeants go loose. We're going to let them have their way with the, you know, we're going to instill fear. That was a way to instill fear, although I think none of them were really taking it. And they were all like, when's my time up? When can I get my benefits? You know, probably all of them were calculating retirement pay and things like that. And, you know, how quickly to get out. But it felt like some sort of like ritualized, you know, hazing session.
That's what I would have been like. So livid. I love that they bring up climate change when the U.S. military is the largest polluter in the entire world. Nobody in the military is about climate change or the environment or anything. They're doing just fine. But and here's where he wraps up.
It's a truth as old as time. And since waging war is so costly in blood and treasure, we owe our republic a military that will win any war we choose or any war that is thrust upon us. Should our enemies choose foolishly to challenge us, they will be crushed by the violence, precision, and ferocity of the War Department. In other words, to our enemies, F-A-F-O. If necessary, our troops can translate that for you. Another way to put it is peace through strength, brought to you by the warrior ethos. And we are restoring both.
He had a please clap moment. What is this man doing?
F-A-F-O.
To a bunch of admirals and generals. He just starts fucking around and find out.
I got to be honest. If I was the Taliban watching, I would have been like, yeah, we know you're F-A-F-O and you F-A-F-O.
Because I think this was supposed to like psych them up, the generals. And they're like, is there a laugh track? What are we doing here?
There was nothing. It was so awkward.
It was so awkward. So some other stuff he went in. Obviously, he did the end of woke policies. He wants to go back to promotions based on merit only, using the baselines from the 1990s. That's way before my time, so I don't know what those baselines are. They're overhauling the fitness program, and they want it set to the highest male standards, keeping it gender neutral. Grooming and appearance, no more beards, long hair, or individual self-expression. But we will cut hair, shave, and comply with standards. They want to overhaul the inspector general system, which is interesting because the inspector general system is what keeps the military actually accountable.
They're going to go after the IGs and all the...
The best way to take care of the troops is to give them good leaders devoted to the culture of warfare. And they want to do a strategic focus to create the most lethal military on the planet. Trump obviously also got his turn to talk, mostly talked about global posturing, talked a lot of shit on Putin, called him a paper tiger again, and went on this interesting, weird stream of thought.
Say that? Now, he gave a great speech, but he talked about Department of War. We were sitting there. I said, didn't it used to be called the Department of War? And he goes, yes, sir. They changed it like in the early 50s. So we won the First World War. We won the Second World War. We won everything in between and everything before that. We only won. And then we went in a way woke. That was probably the first sign of wokeness. And we changed it to defense instead of war. And I said, what do you think? How do you think if we change it back? Would that be a nice idea?
Once again.
We won World War One. Not really, but we won World War Two. Definitely not. Definitely not. The war was already finished by the time D-Day happened. Soviet troops were already pushing hard and fast. So I just don't, I really despise this revisionism. But of course, there it is. And everything before that, I just can imagine the red, white, and blue on Constantinople's walls. Defending it, and with Alexander Nevsky holding the stars and stripes, it's just crazy, this kind of language. Really,
well,
crazy.
We went woke and started calling it Department of Defense, and that's why we lost Vietnam. If we weren't woke, we wouldn't have lost Vietnam. See, now we're Department of War. We'll start winning wars again.
Yeah, why not?
I find this interesting, and I did a long post on the large account. This comes as Trump's approval ratings are not good.
Not good.
Not good at all. And look at these, more importantly, so if you look at the one on the bottom right, compared to his predecessors, Trump's second term is historically bad, and he's even underperforming himself, his first term. And I also want people to look, and I want this to kind of be a consistent theme throughout this stream, because we're going to be talking about it a lot. In that top right, under net approval, there obviously is no value for April, but the Israel-Palestine conflict, look at that, negative 19 points on his handling of the Israeli-Palestine conflict, aka genocide. So I think that that's important to note while all of this is going on, and he's trying to drum up the admirals and the generals, as his public approval rating is just abysmal.
Abysmal. It's horrible. It's horrible. Not only that, you can clearly see that nobody in that crowd was enthusiastic. Probably even his own supporters were like, oh God, what's going on here? You heard like a few shouts like, oh, woo, he, But that was it. Like, and he actually said, I don't remember if you remember the part. He's like, what's going on? Like, you all should be clapping and mm-hmm. you know. And then he said a part that was very interesting. He said, if you don't want to, then you can leave, but then you'll lose your rank
and your job.
Everything. I was like, oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you're supposed to be enjoying this. So that I'm like getting confused even with what day it is. So I think that happened. Yes, that happened yesterday. Let's take it back to Sunday. So I want to set up a little bit of a timeline to give us this Gaza plan update where we're at now. So on Sunday, because we're just finding this out now, Witkoff, Kushner, Netanyahu, and Ron Dermer met for 6 hours on Sunday to speak about the plans for Gaza. Why Jared Kushner? Well, we all know why. We'll get more into that later. But they spent 6 hours together on Sunday. On Monday, the 29th, Bibi and Trump reveal their plan. I'm going to play this quick summary video. This is a really good account on YouTube. If you guys feel like subscribing, check it out.
After years of death and destruction, Trump now claims he can bring eternal peace to the Middle East. From Washington, he announced a 21-point proposal for Gaza, a plan written with Israel and its allies, but without Palestinians. Once again, outsiders draw Gaza's fate. Israel will only begin to withdraw if hostages are returned within 72 hours. Gaza's freedom tied entirely to Israel's conditions. In exchange, nearly 2,000 Palestinian prisoners would be freed. And for this limited phase, Israel suspends its airstrikes and shelling. But Gaza will not govern itself. Instead, a transitional technocratic committee, supervised by Trump and Tony Blair, takes over. Hamas and all Palestinian factions are excluded. Aid is promised, but it will be delivered and distributed only by foreign agencies. Palestinians stripped even of the right to manage their own relief. Hamas members may leave Gaza safely or disarm for amnesty. Yet the plan ignores why they exist, offering no path for reconciliation or political resolution. And at its core, Israel never fully leaves Gaza. Troops remain in a new permanent buffer zone, redrawing Gaza's borders under Israeli control. This so-called peace plan cements Israeli dominance. It avoids the central questions: no Palestinian statehood, no recognition of Jerusalem, no right of return. It offers management, not liberation. The language of peace hides a harsher truth. Israel failed to erase Gaza by force, so now seeks to dictate its future through Trump's diplomacy. Trump's 21 points are not a road to peace. They are a road to permanent occupation, a humiliation imposed on Gaza's people. Real peace will come only when Palestinians, not Israel or foreign powers, decide their own future.
So we know that the plan is abysmal. I'm glad that that video also included the fact that Israel refuses to withdraw. And we'll go over those changes in a second. This also comes on the heels of another poll where the changes in the opinions towards Israel have changed dramatically as well. 51% of voters now oppose sending additional U.S. economic or military support. For the first time since this question was asked in 1998, more Americans sympathize with Palestinians than with Israel. 35% sympathize with Palestine, 34% to Israel. Among Democrats, 54% side with Palestinians and just 13% with Israel. Six out of 10 Americans say Israel should stop its military campaign, even if Hamas isn't eliminated or the hostages remain. And this is the poll that they published visually, is to show that 62% of voters say that Israel is not taking enough precautions to protect civilians. 40% believe Israel is intentionally killing civilians in Gaza, which is double the amount that said so in 2023. And here is something I want people to pay special attention to. The under 30 crowd, 61% mm-hmm. sympathize with Palestine. And I think it's just 19% with Israel. Really shocking.
Huge change. We're talking about a sea change. Hence the reason why as we mentioned before, TikTok, Instagram, X, everything becomes target number one for Hasbara machine. Because exactly. These have been the main vehicle since October 7th to change and transform public opinion on Palestine, which was already changing before October 7th, but it massively changed it afterwards. We're talking like pendulum swing.
Yeah.
They want to take control of it as much as possible. And you can see the kind of money they're throwing at it at this point.
Oh, yeah. It's insane. So then yesterday we find out that before the plan was even published, Bibi secured a bunch of edits. So we find out Netanyahu secured edits tying IDF withdrawal to Hamas's disarmament, giving Israel veto power. This is something that we were questioning anyway, that was in the original plan. Here's the map that you could tell they drew it.
So bad.
They didn't even bother. They like drew it on their phone.
It's like Microsoft Paint.
It really is. Here's the map that they've settled upon, I guess. And then we did have, there is a video of Bibi going around. It's in Hebrew, so I didn't play it, but he does say that Israel will never withdraw from Gaza. That's not happening. He says, there's no way. Mm-hmm. So the Saudi, Egypt, Jordan, Turkey, and Qatar apparently expressed fury, viewing the edits as a betrayal of mediated terms, with Qatar even urged the White House not to publish. And the White House went ahead and published them anyway.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Look at what they did to the Arabs. The Arabs fell for it again, award. Sorry, no offense, guys. No.
Offense should be taken. Offense should be taken.
They put Bibi on the hook to Paul Qatar. This is what he says, this backhanded ass apology for bombing your country. Like, it's just bullshit. And then they lied.
Hamas was there.
And then they secure all these things. Then they say, Trump, please don't present this. We didn't agree to the changes. And he presents it anyway to push them into a corner.
It's a fait accompli. It really is. The funny part is they totally push them into this. And then they gaslight them. Like, wait a minute. What do you mean?
You agreed to this.
What? This is the Abrahamic shield. This is what we're going for. You see, you got to love it.
So we'll go over the changes. So here's the changes. The IDF withdrawal timeline in the original provision, it was loosely tied to the hostage releases and aid and a full pullout after three phases. Netanyahu has now staged it over three phases, but has linked it to his own benchmarks and given Israel veto power. Even post phases, the IDF will maintain a permanent security perimeter inside Gaza until Gaza is properly secure, according to Israel. So forever. Read that as forever. In the original, Hamas's disarmament was only for offensive weapons, and they would be decommissioned, supervised by regional guarantors. It is now changed to all arms, small, large, defensive, offensive, anything that can be rebuilt, anything at all. They're taking everything. Gaza governance and terminology. In the first provision, they were referenced as Palestinian citizens. This is important. And that referenced as Palestinian citizens and the U.S.-Israel role in inviting Qatar to host the talks. Bibi made sure that was changed to people of Gaza. They're not Palestinians. And removed all acknowledgement of the U.S. and Israel asking Qatar to host Hamas, and inserts Trump and Tony Blair and creates the Board of Peace. So if you guys the Board of Peace is in the 20. Well, you know what's so funny, Chris, is they published it as a 21-point plan, and then they realized like hours later that it was only 20 points. Everything. It would have been easier just to add another point. Instead, they're like, it's a 20-point plan. So, okay. I think that's really significant that they changed it from Palestinian citizens to people of Gaza, as if they're just these random people that sort of hang out in Gaza and happen to be there. De-radicalization. In the original, it says there was a mutual process, like kind of saying there's a de-radicalization that needs to go on in Israel as well. And now it has been changed. It is only referring to Palestinians, and it has removed all references or suggestions to Israelis needing to be de-radicalized at all. And then lastly, territorial control. In the original, it said Israel would hand over cleared areas promptly to interim forces. In the new version, the redrawn lines allow Israel to retain over 50% of Gaza initially and then establish buffer zones along the borders. So there's that.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, by the way, I just want to reference this again. I interviewed Hamas officials, Dr. Bassem Naim and Osama Hamdan, last August in their Doha office that was bombed by the Zionists, right? And when I was with them, the meeting was supposed to last an hour, it lasted 3 hours. And they told me you know, of course, a lot off the record, but on the record, they told me that the Israelis had violated at every point, every agreed upon point and clause reached through the mediators, to the point where the Hamas was like, what's the point of negotiations if you're just going to, you know, go, we negotiate, you agree, and then you all of a sudden come back and you renegotiate all the terms, which is totally against, you know, what contract law is. This is the standard legal understanding of an agreement. And so what's happening now is to push Hamas in a corner so as to say that now everybody is against you. You've heard this language now. Everybody is against Hamas now. Yeah, but the Hamas officials there are not even fighting. They're just doing the diplomacy. And they're saying, wait a minute, we're also guarantors of the peace as the legitimate government of Gaza, right? They are still the legitimate government, voted and elected by the people. They still have an obligation to protect the people there and their interests. But you see what's going on now. Now you push everything to terrorism, and you can renege all on the basic human rights and human values that should be there, including calling them Palestinian people, not only Palestinian people, Palestinian citizens, right? Mm-hmm. Now, just the people of Gaza, some amorphous nomadic group that came into our land, so to speak, and now they have to be booted from it. So that's very important to understand here. It's very important to understand that this entire process has been mired by Israeli subterfuge to try to destroy any prospects of a negotiated settlement, which could have been done under the Biden administration. And now here we are at the final moments of this ongoing genocide, and they're going to push as far as they can, as hard as they can towards the end.
Let's hammer home how bad this Tony Blair thing is.
And we'll do it right, and we're going to put leaders from other countries on, and leaders that are very distinguished leaders, and we'll have a board, and one of the people that wants to be on the board is the UK former Prime Minister, Tony Blair, good man, very good man, and some others, and they'll be named over the next few days, and it'll be quite the...
Butcher Robbie Rock.
Oh, and Tony Blair, of course, remember, was the great champion of the war in Iraq, great reflection of basically British imperial thinking.
Oh, crap. I deleted it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Sachs goes on and says he's the butcher of Iraq, the author or the architect of the plans that killed millions of Iraqis, et cetera, et cetera. So we've got Tony Blair heading up this. We also have, I want you guys to remember, we went over this extensively, Abraham Shield. They have ramped up their own campaign inside of Israel. Get it done. Seal the deal. Israel stands with Mr. President, et cetera. Guys, I highly implore you to go to abrahamshield.org and read that. The 21-point plan is actually a combination of Abraham Shield and the Great Trust. Those are the two plans coming together to create the, sorry, I keep calling it the 21-point plan, 20-point plan. Those are the plans coming together. Guys, please look up these plans. We have done extensive coverage on both of these things. They're both on the large account. Moving on. Now, I want your opinion on this. We have a massive airlift to Al Udeid. We have dozens of 135 tankers and 46 Pegasus refueling aircraft. They've taken along their contingents of fighter jets, and many have been redeployed from the UK bases. This buildup almost exactly mirrors the buildup that we had in June. What are your thoughts?
I think I just spoke with an Iranian diplomat just two nights ago. We had dinner here in Moscow, and they told me that they are prepared. They are prepared already on the ground. Preparations are being made for another escalation, another war of aggression on Iran by the Zionists and the Americans. And so there's been reports out. We don't know the full veracity yet. We're trying to get full confirmation, but there are reports that a Russian military hardware has been flown into Iran. There are reports of Russian military aircraft landing at various airports. And there's also reports that Russia has now delivered advanced equipment, including fighter jets, to Iran. What China is doing is not so clear, but clearly Iranian officials, after the previous 12-day war of aggression, went to China to also purchase some military equipment there. The question, of course, remains, if escalation comes again, will Iran stick to its own red lines, or will, you know, all these red lines disappear? And will we see a bigger bombardment of Israeli cities than we saw before? We saw a very measured response by Iran, because Iran is still mired in the debate between reformists and hardliners. But if this happens again, the question then becomes, will they go sort of, as you know, colloquially to say, balls to the wall and just launch massive sorties and massive amounts of missiles onto, and will it flare up in the region? I think that certainly something's on the move. I think that Bibi needs this as well. As Gaza begins ramping down, supposedly now, which I don't think so, but they're trying to portray it as the Gaza case is coming to an end, and they're going to liberate these last bastions of territory, and then there's going to be some transition there. Bibi's going to want to then pivot and move. And you've seen already people are saying, this is an 8-front war. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going to see further escalations in other parts. This is not over yet. This is only the beginning. So what comes next remains to be seen. But I definitely think my hunch is that we will see an attack by the Zionist entity and the Americans on Iran in the coming days, weeks, or months, for sure. Well,
there's even more staging going on. So what we do know is the USS Gerald R. Ford, did have a port visit in Oslo, which is very uncommon. Lucky assholes, I didn't get to go to Scandinavia. I got stuck going to Bahrain 4 times. Anyway, they did just make a port call in Oslo, and immediately after that, headed around to go through the Strait of Gibraltar to enter the Mediterranean. I'm not going to let you guys hold me too firmly to it, but I will say that what I think will happen is now that the Nimitz has, as of 6 days ago, the Nimitz left its port call in Dubai. I'm going to guess that it's probably floating around in the Gulf of Aden, Gulf of Oman, around there. And the Gerald Ford will be probably staging itself in the Red Sea, which with its carrier strike group. So they will be surrounding that peninsula on both sides. That's just what I think. And then, of course, they have the massive buildup in Qatar itself. That's just what where my thoughts are going. I do know the Nimitz has been out there for less than 6 months, so it's not going home soon. And I've heard rumors that they're slated for 9 months on the deployment. So that means that they'll both be out there at the same time for at least a decent overlap. What are your thoughts?
No, I think that all of the deployment of these naval assets and with them their aerial assets is an enormous indication of what's to come. I mean, leaving their ports of call now, when there's no escalation and no real need, and there's even been, you know, some, you know, talks behind the scenes, now leaving their ports of call as snapback sanctions go back on Iran, which just happened, shows you that there is some process, there is something going on here. Russian officials are also very clear that they will continue to support Iran even against the snapback sanctions. They don't recognize the snapback sanctions as being legitimate, right, nor do the Chinese. So I think that there's definitely something going on behind the scenes in preparation for this. Not to mention, I find it interesting, this meeting of Hegseth could have been, I'm gonna put on the conspiratorial.
Yeah, I was about to put mine on in like two parts, so go ahead.
I think this meeting of all of these generals and leaders could have been a cover for a more secret meeting for the preparations of greater military escalation.
That's what I was going to say.
Yes.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say we have those ships now staged in their respective theaters, or staging the Ford. Yemen has announced plans to target U.S. oil majors, including ExxonMobil and Chevron, despite a prior truce with the Trump admin to avoid attacks on U.S.-linked ships in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. The Sana'a-based Humanitarian Operations Coordination Center has sanctioned 13 U.S. companies, 9 executives, and 2 vessels, stating they shall be dealt with in accordance with the principles of confrontation. So I see false flag. And then while all of this is going on, you put your conspiratorial hat on, I put mine on, and Trump did this. So while the generals are all in, that's what, that when I first saw this picture, I said, that's exactly where I went, exactly where your brain went. I said, well, wait a minute, where, what are the secret meetings? What are the meetings we don't know about taking place? Look who's in, look what sort of contingents have flooded into Washington over these last couple days. So what sort of meetings went on? Not saying that our generals met with Chabad. I'm just saying, like, that just put it in my mind. Like, oh yeah, there's tons of other people.
There's tons of meetings going on. There's a lot of high level stuff going on. You have at one side, the generals, on another side, media moguls and, you know, Israeli influencer meetings.
Yes.
You have the Lubavitch now meeting with Trump because they also have a huge following. They have it's a cult, basically.
Right.
You know, for all intents and purposes, huge money, huge investments, big time power in New York. We know Williamsburg area, that whole area.
Oh, yeah.
In Brooklyn. So when you start to expand on this, you're like, my gosh, they're really ramping up. This is a multi-frontal assault at this point, you know? And in the background, you have, simultaneous to this, you have the Russians saying that there's going to be false flags in Romania, in Poland, in other places. We're looking at two areas of operations now that have the ability for false flag scenarios to escalate confrontation in the, you know, Southwest Asia and also in Eastern Europe. And I think that's a really, really interesting timing for the two of them.
You forgot the third one. We're not talking about it in the
South. Venezuela.
Yeah, the amphibious ready group is right there. They're staged and ready to make landing as soon as they are given the green light. There just needs to be like a glimmer of a false flag in three different theaters for all of this to just absolutely explode.
Oh, absolutely. And on a level that we haven't seen, I mean, this is like world war type scenario because, okay, global war on terror, small units, okay, spec ops, you're going to go in, Rangers, you're going to send them in, the SEALs. But this is going to be conventional, heavy conventional fighting, bombardments from the air, from sea assets. We're talking about groups of thousands to tens of thousands of troops in some of these theaters, if not more. And we're not talking about small operations here. So I think that shows that really would then give credence to why it changed from Department of Defense to Department of War. Here we go.
Exactly. So in keeping up with our theme, I've really been trying to drive this sort of coup d'etat that's going on our sort of brainwaves in the United States. We've talked about the TikTok takeover. We talked about the things on campuses. We talked about all that. Well, something that I stumbled upon, thanks to Desiree, one of our Spaces hosts, is this firm called Founders Films. Now, I don't want to give Chris nightmares, but this is their first production.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh God. This woman.
So let me tell you guys a little bit about it. This is called Founders Films. This is something that I apologize. I've never told you guys about this. It's from June. I didn't know about it until now. So they founded this new film studio. It's Peter Thiel. He's a key influencer. This is quotes from some descriptions. Thiel's libertarian philosophy, shaped by Ayn Rand, works like Atlas Shrugged, underpins the project's ethos. Other contributors include venture capitalists and tech executives from Palantir and related firms, though specific names beyond Thiel are not fully detailed. Founders Film seeks to produce content that glorifies American military prowess, entrepreneurial success, and resistance to government overreach. They intend to remake Hollywood by countering what they call decades of cultural decay with films that resonate with conservative and libertarian audiences. They're backed by venture capital from Mithril, which is Peter Thiel, Palantir Profits, contributions from other Silicon Valley elites, Palmer Luckey with Anduril, and initial estimates suggest a $500 million war chest dwarfing many indie studio budgets.
First and foremost, what a load of bullshit. I'm going to throw it out there. We can swear here, so it's good. This is absolute. What do they mean decades decades of cultural decay. We just had Top Gun Maverick come out. That was the blueprint for the strike on Iran.
Literally.
Yeah, with the support, it was a huge box office hit. Highway. And all these jets are flying and goes goddamn commies and Iranians and the Chinese and the Russians were going after them all. And, you know, everybody's just like, everyone's just salivating at the thought of the 80s and the Reagan era. And we're, you know, we're fighting the evil empire. And people loved it. People were flocking to this. It's all over the airlines. You can see it on the Emirates flight, Turkish flight, whichever one you want.
It was on my Turkish flight.
Yes. So this was done with, this is absolutely conservative and libertarian principles. We're going to Mach 10. It's like, what? No human can survive Mach 10, but we're going to do it in America. And here it is. You know? Tom Cruise. Meanwhile, Tom Cruise is also in the final Mission Impossible sequence, which again is about the Russian submarine that has this AI technology. And again, the Americans have to save the day as well, with an organization even more secret and secluded than the CIA, right?
Oh, dear.
There has been a steady stream, a Zero Dark 30. How many of these movies have we had in recent memory that have glorified the military, that have glorified the war on terror, that have glorified torture, that have exonerated people who have committed heinous war crimes? Oh, all now to say we need to start new movies and new industry. But wait a minute, you're bringing back Tony Blair from obscurity to put him back at the peace board here. You see, nothing.
They really are grasping at straws. They're like, we need Tony Blair back and we need Top Gun. We need the 90s. Spice Girls.
At this point, we got to bring back the Golden Girls, you know?
Like, they're really looking like they're like any way to get back to the Golden Age. And I know what Trump thinks is the Golden Age. It's the 80s and the 90s when he made all of his money and he had all of his philandering.
Yeah, of course. Grab him by the pussy. That's it. We're back. America's back. America's back.
America's back.
You know? Listen.
Go ahead.
But I want to say one last thing. One of the critical things here is that on one side, they're going to try, and this is where Daniel McAdams is rightfully, okay, I know Ron Paul Institute isn't libertarian fully, but they have some principles. How can American military prowess also coincide with resistance to government overreach when we have scenarios where people have resisted American government overreach and military prowess only to be butchered and gunned down? Ruby Ridge, Waco, not to mention, there's so many episodes in American history in the past with different human figures who've resisted on libertarian principles, and now they want to combine the two. I mean, talk about ideological inconsistency, but I guess we're in a generation of that, so here we go.
Well, other projects that they have planned are obviously a biopic of Peter Thiel, a military action movie inspired by the recent U.S. operations in Iran, a movie about Operation Rising Lion, about Israel overcoming Iranian aggression. And here's my favorite one. Well, I just want to show people what this is actually a strategy that celebrities often use. Israel has employed more than once. So there's a movie that they're producing called When the Towers Fall. Now, you would say that's definitely about 9/11, right? It's probably a movie that's going to pull any sort of indication that Israel was involved. It'll make it into a sort of Israel-American victimization. No, the movie is really about the pager attack on Hezbollah. Now, you might say to yourself, why would they name it that? Why would they name When the Towers Fall? So now when you Google towers and Israel and anything like that, you get their pager attack. You're not going to get 9/11 anymore. Just like dancing Israelis, you get October 7th. You don't get 9/11 anymore. There you go. I mean, and don't tell me that I'm conspiratorial, because we all know Beyonce did this too with her songs. This is what celebrities will do. If there's a rumor going around, they'll bury it with a song or another. And Israel, people employ the same thing in politics. Okay, so we've also gone over this, the influencers. If you guys aren't following Gen X Girl on Twitter, you need to. She comes up with all these great infographics, so you know who's getting paid. And these bitches is getting paid. So here's they're calling this the eighth front of the war, which is obviously a war on our sensibilities, We know that they've funneled tens of thousands of dollars for Israel 365. I also want people to understand that TPUSA 365 feeds into Israel 365. So there's that other part of the coup. Now, what are they paying these influencers? I don't know, $7,000 per post.
We could have made $7,000 tonight. I'm calling Putin now.
How many times a day do you hear, shut up, Russian propagandist, shut up, Russian shill, shut up, Russian bot? And I'm like, we're literally surrounded by people that are admittedly getting paid by Israel.
And then they have the balls to talk about China controlling this, Russia controlling that. Meanwhile, openly, Israel does it, but they're our best friend, Judeo-Christian civilization. We are together from the beginning. Really? I don't know any of the founding fathers who talked about Israel. None of them.
Benjamin Franklin was a famous Judeo-Christian theologist.
Oh, totally. Totally. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if some of them harbored some, you know, not too kosher views. They were men of their times. What can I say?
Wait, Chris, there's more. This is for my gamer boys. They bought Electronic Arts. They bought video game firm Electronic Arts. Who bought it? The Saudis and Jared Kushner for $55 million.
That's it. We're done.
We've got games. We've got a movie studio. We've got a streaming service. We now have the propaganda school curriculum with TPUSA. We have our influencers. We now own the largest social media platform in the United States, TikTok. And they don't even need to own the second largest, X, because they have Elon by the balls.
Oh, my God. They're going to take over everything at this point.
Wait, I forgot one. They bought CBS. They purchased CBS, the channel.
And isn't Barry Weiss going to...
Barry Weiss and Matt Taibbi.
Oh, my God.
So that's where we're at. And then, so today, finally, you know, reporters once in a while do their job.
How did the White House decide that it is appropriate for Jared Kushner to be working on matters that involve Qatar, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, three countries that combined have given him more than $2.5 billion for his investment firm?
I think it's, frankly... despicable that you're trying to suggest that it's inappropriate for Jared Kushner, who is widely respected around the world and has great trust in relationships with these critical partners in these countries, to strike a 20-point comprehensive detailed peace plan that no other administration would ever be able to achieve. And so Jared is donating his energy and his time to our government, to the President of the United States, to secure world peace. And that is a very noble thing. And this is a peace plan that has not just been accepted by Israel, but it has been applauded by Muslim and Arab countries around the world. It has been applauded by European leaders around the world. Virtually everyone in the world is supportive of this plan that Jared Kushner offered his time to help put together alongside our special envoy Witkoff, the vice president, the president of the United States, Secretary Rubio, and the president's entire national security team. We are very proud of that plan, and we hope Hamas will accept it because it will lead to a more peaceful and prosperous Middle East.
How dare you? How dare you ask
this question?
How dare you?
Do not ask questions about Ivanka Trump's personal twink, okay?
He's definitely a cuck.
100%. The twinks are off limits.
100%.
So that's where we're at. We got a Jared Kushner peace plan, a Jared Kushner studio. Like, it's the amount that's happening while people are still arguing over who killed Charlie Kirk is incredible. Incredible.
No. Listen. Not only think about this, all of this comes, for those who don't know, I helped to crack another part of the Epstein case by discovering the second black book, the phone book, and releasing it. How do people not understand that the Epstein stuff has also been memory holed now? It was just 2 months ago when we were all clamoring, and I'm still talking about it almost on a daily basis, and nobody, it just disappeared. What Epstein? Why do you care about Epstein? This is if we were to have a series, this is the revenge of Epstein. Because now, look at everything that's happening. All of these connections and relations and this and that. This is the fruition of it.
Yep. This is
the long-term program. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very funny. Some people here are like, you know, we Russians are bad. We don't plan in like 5-10 years. I'm like, well, Stalin did and Lenin did, but okay, you didn't.
Yeah, they literally had 5-year and 10-year plans, but all right.
They forgot that part. But the Epstein group plans in like decades and
millennia,
like centuries, right? Like, you know, 50 years out, 100 years out, where are we going to be at? So I just want to say that there's so much stuff happening now. I don't know why people are not more paranoid and schizophrenic about everything. Maybe that's why when I was, you know, studying philosophy in graduate school, there were some people who were like, schizophrenia is a natural byproduct of this society because ultimately this is what it does to you. But just think how things have shifted and changed to the point where now, just a year or two ago, it was China's controlling TikTok and we needed to have it. And now Israel buys not only TikTok, but all of these gaming consortiums that are so influential for a young generation. And nobody says anything. No problem. What's the issue? And not only that, why do you ask a question about him getting $2.5 billion when he's a good businessman, respected businessman, and he's going to get this peace deal done? Wait a minute. We had a peace deal already. What happened to it? Oh, we just scuttled it so that he could get credit for it.
Exactly.
But if he was going to do it, he could get more money to take even more stuff. You see?
See, and you get it too. This is exactly what I think. When they started with the Abraham Accords again, I started calling them the Epstein Accords. I was like, there's something else going on here because there's some blackmail or something. There's no reason why any of these things should be happening the way that they're happening. I totally agree that the Epstein network is far, far, far further reaching and still going and has compromised so many of the people involved in these sort of discussions and deals. This administration is so compromised. So compromised.
No, you're 100% correct.
100%. I do want to give you guys a short update on the flotilla. But first, government shutdown last night. So here's Trump.
If there is a shutdown, I think it would be a tremendously negative mark on the president of the United States. He's the one that has to get people together. I hear the Democrats are going to be blamed and the Republicans are going to be blamed. I actually think the president would be blamed.
Well, if you say who gets fired, it always has to be the top. I mean, problems start from the top and they have to get solved from the top. And the president's the leader and he's got to get everybody in a room and he's got to lead.
I heard Boehner before I left say there's no way we're going to close up government. Well, that means the other side just won. Because if you don't have that at least threat, you can't do anything. You can't, and they got nothing. You got to say, we're going to close it. We're going to close it. You got to scare them.
As far as keeping the government open, I think we want to keep the government open. Don't you agree?
But you can't negotiate when your top person said, there's no way we close up government.
Build that wall. Now, the obstructionist Democrats would like us not to do it, but believe me, we have to close down our government. We're building that wall.
When the government is, you know, they talk about the government shutdown, they're going to be talking about the president of the United States. Who was the president at that time? So I really think the pressure is on the president.
The Democrats are really looking at something that is very dangerous for our country. They are looking at shutting down.
It's not really shutting down the government. It's cutting costs. The kind of money that you're talking about is peanuts.
We have, of all in the world, probably the dumbest leadership. That's why. It's very simple. Nobody has dumb leadership like us.
We're actually in a government shutdown, which I'll keep my conspiratorial hat on and say that they wanted the government to shut down because now they're using it to purge the government of people who are disloyal to Trump.
I agree. Not only that, while there's a government shutdown, there's a lot of information that can't get out because a lot of are either furloughed and things like that. There's a lot of investigations, a lot of inspector general type stuff that can't happen. I mean, it's a perfect opportunity to, you know, let some things fall through the cracks and who's going to check and how long is it going to go? And I don't even know what you're talking about.
With respect to those federal programs whose funding would lapse and which are otherwise unfunded, such programs are no longer statutorily required to be carried out. Therefore, consistent with applicable law, agencies are directed to use this opportunity to consider reduction in force notices for all employees in programs, projects, or activities that satisfy any of the three following conditions. Ready? One, discretionary funding lapses on October 1st. Two, another source of funding is not currently available. Or three, it is not consistent with the president's priorities.
Right. Great.
We should be looking at reduction in force notices coming out in large numbers to lay off government workers, to consolidate power and purge the government.
Who needs to pay for DOGE when you can just have a government shutdown and purge it all yourself?
Exactly. DOGE never did anything anyway. So that's the government shutdown. We have no idea what will happen. I guess we'll report on it again on Sunday as it further develops and then on into eternity. But I wouldn't panic. I mean, I don't know about you, but every year I was enlisted, we did a government shutdown. I just don't know what this
part for the course at this point. Yeah. The question is ultimately if this government shutdown is going to start what I think is, you know, reduction in certain areas where Trump doesn't want people to work anymore or doesn't want a lot of support. And I think that that's good. This is the perfect opportunity. You know, why let this artificial crisis go to waste?
Exactly. Okay, we have a little flotilla update. So this was as of when we were coming on the stream. They were being intercepted. Just so our viewers know, both Spain and Italy have left the flotilla with their ships that were protecting it. Italians have said that they are commencing a general strike on Friday in response to this, which they've done before. And I don't know if anybody knows anything about Italy, but they have a very strong working class movement there. So just so you know that. And then we have one video, I think, that of this is them boarding. I guess they were just there to pick up Greta.
They wanted to show Greta that, oh, we're taking such good care of them. And, oh, you know, while we bomb kids to smithereens in Gaza, we're taking good care of Greta. She can put her frog hat on and jacket.
Ridiculous, right? And another thing I do want people to know is that I did report on rockets allegedly being fired from Gaza to, I think it was Ashdod or Ashkelon, one or the other, doesn't really matter, somewhere in Israel. Guys, I reported it without saying resistance or Hamas for a reason. That's because I don't even know that Hamas or the resistance would be firing rockets right now when they haven't done it for months and the peace plan is on the table. Who do you think is firing these rockets?
Could be misfires from,
exactly. From the idea. So the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I caution people to get excited and be like, oh, Hamas is fighting back. I don't think that Hamas would do something that stupid while the peace plan's on the table, but Israel would.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And better news, guess who's back?
Now, remember this car, this Auburn police vehicle that was involved in that barbaric search of Mrs. Cossack? Well, we know it's unroadworthy, so we've decided to be a good Samaritan and help the police. Now, we're going to try and fix their vehicle up. It's obviously damaged. Come along. This is actually a defect. So we're going to try and tape it up. Do a nice job for the police. We're going to help them out. We've got a bit of masking tape here. And out of concern for community safety and police safety, we're going to try and fix this up. I think, we're going to be sending an invoice to Auburn Police in the mail for fixing this up, keeping the community safe from defective police vehicles. So thank goodness the Aussie Cossack was on the scene. Cops aren't very keen, are they, guys? They know the Cossack is out and about.
Just good. Holden.
So Aussie's back on YouTube.
He's back.
I promised Aria I would show the promo. So there you guys go. Make sure you find Aussie on YouTube. I'm sorry, I had a blank out there. Any other thoughts
I just want to emphasize that, you know, we stand in solidarity. I've got three very good comrades on the flotilla.
Oh yeah, we know people on the flotilla. We're not disparaging the flotilla. We're just
disparaging the IDF for the stupid propaganda that they're trying to throw up there now. Like, oh, we're going to help everybody in the flotilla. Meanwhile, they targeted the rear first and pushed everybody into basically a military type scenario of encirclement. But we stand in solidarity with the flotilla. We hope one day that there's so many boats in a flotilla that they cannot even catch them all. And some will make it finally. I was speaking, as I said, in a space earlier tonight. I was speaking with George Galloway and Cynthia McKinney, who were on an earlier flotilla over a decade ago. And I remember that one vividly. And they were saying how we were talking together and saying how much things have changed since those early flotilla days where we just activists, you know, those of us in the Palestine Solidarity Movement, lefties, some libertarian anti-war types. We were the only ones who knew about the flotillas. Nobody else knew.
Nobody
about
knew, yeah.
The whole world is watching the flotillas. So, of course, our full solidarity to all of our comrades on the flotilla. We hope for their safe return, and we hope for the next flotilla to be even bigger than this one. I don't believe, as some people have said, even in our circles, that this is just for show. I think that it extends the resources of the IDF. It extends the resources and assets of the Zionist Navy and Air Force, and it ultimately takes all of their eyes and attention away from the crimes that they're committing against the Palestinian people. So I hope somebody sleeps a little bit better tonight, knowing that a lot of these assets are out there handling these amazing activists and comrades in the struggle. And we hope, of course, for eventually the end of this Holocaust on the Palestinian people and the full liberation of the Palestinian people. That's what we're fighting for. It's what we've been fighting for. And that's what we will continue to fight for. So that's DD Geopolitics line.
That is our line, really. Thank you, FaZe Will and Auntie Anne. I used to think Bill Gates was the Antichrist, but apparently he was just setting the stage for the real deal Antichrist. Absolutely. I think they're all the Antichrist. I think technology, their technology might be the Antichrist. I'm not sure. But Peter Thiel, you know what? Here's the other thing with the Google. Another one of my theories is that Peter Thiel held his Antichrist seminar. So when people Google Peter Thiel is the Antichrist, all you get is his seminar instead of all of the articles that people wrote saying Peter Thiel was the Antichrist. Guys, buckle up, get your tinfoil, call Instacart or whatever it is you do. It's going to get worse, especially now that we're in a government shutdown.
Here we go.
I hope you guys enjoyed our show and our new theming. Thanks to Aria, the producer. We will see you guys on Sunday. There's a space tonight debunking the Russo-Israeli alliance myth at 6:15 Pacific, so 9:15 Eastern. Hopefully you guys can make that. And Sully is still open right now with live updates on the flotilla. I'm sorry I couldn't get you guys like up to the minute, but he's there doing that. So we will see you guys on Sunday. Love to you all. I will try to get a hold of Patrick Henningsen and a good guest for next Wednesday. Thank you, guys. Enjoy the rest of your work week.
Take care, everyone.